Alon, we have walked quite a journey with this particular series. Shall we try and recap very quickly?
So we started off thinking there would be 10 episodes, and as it happened, it turned out to be 11, because things happen on the way. I suppose that's the entrepreneurial way. We started off with you are always the primary salesperson. You, the founder, the CEO, the MD. Number two is they need something to sell. So that was defining your products, your pricing, etc. They need someone to sell to, so defining your markets. They need to earn commission. And so this is about ensuring that your commission structures are properly defined and including all the variables that happen in a sale. They need to build a business within your business. So this is about their growth trajectory within your business. You need to contract them. That is making sure that you've got aligned expectations and that's contracted. You need to train them, the process, and this is where we added an additional podcast. So you need to train them, the process of training, and then we split that into another podcast, which was you need to train them the content. What is the content? How do you think about the content of training your salespeople? Then you need to assess them to see if they are competent, and we spoke about how to assess your sales team.
And going into that, if I may just add, I was a little bit hesitant because I didn't want this. I don't want to be in an exam again. I don't want to be in a situation where I'm putting other people or making other people feel like they're back in school. But actually, you need to do that. Mm-hmm. It's interesting.
Mm. Then the last podcast was you need to manage them. And today, we are going to be talking about you need to support them.
Let's quickly define what support is before we start speaking about perhaps some of the mechanisms of it and how we do that. What do you mean by support?
If you think about a healthy environment for a salesperson, it's around confidence. It's a place where they feel confident about their company, their product, themselves, and it's also about the ease to sell. So a salesperson who has a very easy time selling is happier than somebody who struggles to sell. So it doesn't mean that you shouldn't put salespeople in places where they are challenged, but you want somebody to have a very good chance to sell. Then you have higher retention, you have higher alignment, and you have higher sales, which is ultimately what you want. So when you talk about support, you're thinking about all the mechanisms to give them confidence, to give them ease of sale, and to ensure that the organization achieves its sales targets through that salesperson.
I'm thinking back to the training podcasts that we went through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking also about some of the content that we spoke about in the last conversation about management.
Yeah.
How is this conversation going to be different from some of those?
Well, it does include training. It's one of the mechanisms that's part of confidence, is if I train you and you know the product and you know how it works and you know how the market works, you're far more confident. And you should theoretically be able to sell the product easier. And so training is one of the mechanisms. But the mechanisms that I want to talk about in this podcast are the proposal templates and proposal support, presentation templates and presentation support, price lists, which we have touched on before, and support from the senior sales team and even the CEO around the complex sales.
Okay, so what we're actually talking about is we're now arming this team. The first one that you mentioned there was proposals and proposal templates.
Yeah, so first of all, you have to recognize not every business uses proposals. If I'm selling at retail, I'm not going to send a proposal to the person who's trying to buy the TV in front of me. But I might need to do that if it's a hotel group buying, you know, 100 TVs. So in many organizations, there's a requirement for proposals to be sent out to, or quotations to be sent out to a client. It's important that you ensure that your sales team has got a proposal template that they use in order to build out a proposal. Often, your sales team are not great writers, proposal writers. And so you need to provide them with as much templatized information, company background, you know, the types of problems that we solve, how we solve them. These can all be pre-written in proposal templates. And then you train your salesperson to fill in the current situation, what the problem is that the client is experiencing, and then help them solution that into the proposal. So when you start to build up an arsenal of proposals, different types of proposals, and you train the salesperson on these are the different types of proposals that we generally send out for these types of clients with these types of requirements, then they literally go onto the shelf. They pull that proposal out, they fill it in the specifics, and they can send it out quite responsibly.
On the one hand, it feels like you're definitely assisting the salesperson and the sales team, but it also feels like there's some other benefits here to the organization as well, from perhaps a brand perspective and a legal perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So you, by creating the templates, are ensuring that it is your CI that is going out there. It's your branding that's going out there in the way that you want to, not at the whim of a new salesperson who doesn't know, that all the legalese and the things that you need to ensure are on the proposal are actually on the proposal to ensure that you're not contracting yourself or committing yourself to things that cannot be delivered on. And also, I think what's important in this whole template environment is that I'm strongly of the view that the sales manager needs to sign this off before it goes out, to have a cursory view on the less complex proposals or the standard proposals that go out, and have quite an in-depth review of the more complex proposals that go out. By doing that, you're going to pick up any mistakes, any commitments that cannot be delivered on by the organization. We often find pricing issues, and we've even caught our sales team not removing a previous client from a standard proposal. So you'll send out, you know, a proposal out and they'll put the wrong company name. In fact, I got a proposal with the wrong company name last night. And immediately I just deleted, because I say you don't even know who you're sending it to.
I was once given the opportunity to go present to a team, a more senior team. So I was a little bit out of my depth, but it was a nice challenge. And I'd taken that same presentation and had presented it to some other team a couple of weeks before, and it had their logos in later on in the presentation with a question: how can X organization, how can your brand, how can your team, whatever it is, do better? And there's this big symbol. I'll tell you, the symbol was a shell. And I got to that particular slide and I had my question lined up and the wrong brand on it, and it totally killed everything. It was just a quick, because it almost sends the message, I didn't prepare, I don't care. And
yeah, and you do this for everyone.
Yeah.
You're not special.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that's also another part of that whole template management process, is to ensure that your templates are up to date with whatever's happening within your organization. Perhaps your organization has a different way of doing things, to ensuring your templates remain up to date. With that, you might even have a logo change or a different set of pricing. So it's important that there's maintenance on these templates as well, and that's fall squarely in the responsibility of the sales manager. Both the maintenance of of the arsenal of templates and the growth of them. In Race Corp, we've got a full-time proposal writer, but I only allow that proposal writer for complex sales, not simple sales.
Mm.
In other words, if it's off-the-shelf product, then the standard template, I train you as a salesperson on how to do that. If it's a complex sale where it's a different type of solutioning, then the proposal writer gets involved because often it's an adjustment to the standard template.
But what I do hear you say when you say you have a full-time proposal writer is that is how serious you feel about proposals.
Correct. Now, we're in a industry that requires it. You might not be, you know, you might be, as once again, selling TVs to the public. And in that instance, you don't need a proposal writer.
Well, there will be a proposal somewhere. I'm certain about that. Another item that you listed earlier was presentations.
Yeah, so you need to be thinking about presentations in a couple of ways. The first is, let's call it a standard PowerPoint or Prezi kind of presentation. And taking somebody through that. But very often what you need to provide is a battery of slides that they can add and subtract to put together a presentation. And very much like the templatized proposal, the presentation is constructed prior to the presentation using a standard set of slides with additional slides that are pre-prepared at being able to be added and, of course, allowing the salesperson to subtract slides that are not relevant and also ensuring there's no Shell logo if you're not presenting to somebody who has a Shell logo as their customer. So that proposal, setting up those proposal slides, once again, your CI, your corporate identity is there. It's about the professionalism of it. It's your fonts are all there.
But it also seems like it's something a little bit more. You're going to get intelligence around what kind of presentations work in what environments as well. So what are the trigger words? What are the right slides to put there so that it sets you up for something else? And you want to be able to give that to your team to be able to use.
Yeah. So I think about it as three steps. Your first step is, I'm going to call it a verbose slide deck. Not too many words on it, but a lot of words which help a new salesperson to give them rails and direction in terms of taking other people through that presentation. The second phase is pictorial, where there's just a picture on or a question on, a single sentence on, and the salesperson is very confident around doing that presentation, knowing all the points. And the third level is where you speak without slides, a presentation without slides. So I generally don't do a presentation anymore with slides because I understand Race Corp and I understand how to talk to a client and create the picture, the slide deck in their mind by speaking to them, because I understand the product and I've got confidence, huge confidence in how I sell that product. So you're trying to move the person to that state where they're having a conversation and they're not presenting. Of course, there's another type of presentation, a fourth type, which is demonstration. It's, I demonstrate something to you, which is a very powerful mechanism. If I'm selling you software, let me demonstrate this to you. If I'm selling you an engine, let me show you the engine when it's switched on so you can hear it, etc. So demonstration is part of that presentation grouping. Even demonstrations, you need to take somebody through how to demonstrate. First, we show them this, how to switch it on. Then we show how simple it is to get to the part that's important. And then we show what it does for you. And these are the kinds of words that you use, and you probably get these kinds of questions around the demonstration. This is the answers. So that ability to have standardized demonstration methodology is also very important.
up to this point, we've now spoken about training. We've spoken about giving them support in the form of proposals and other similar templates. And then we've also spoken about presentations. I know there's a couple more that you still want to cover.
Price lists. I know it sounds quite passé, but price lists is something that I see many entrepreneurial businesses don't manage properly. They have a price list that is too simple or outdated. And so every time there is a sale, the salesperson then is feeling insecure around the price list. So price lists are a very essential part of supporting a sales team and ensuring that in that price list that there is sufficient information. It's easy to understand how to price, what to price. So for example, if you've got a product which is comes in three colors, that three colors are present there in the price list. It's green, red, and blue, and it's all the same price. Or you've got different types of the same product. So you've got the basic, the intermediate, and then you've got the deluxe, and then, you know, the pricing around each. And you've got all the rules around that product, minimum quantities, etc., in the price list. So that price list is actually filled with information. It's not just an Excel spreadsheet with the name of the product and the price.
And this price list isn't going to the client. This is sitting on the side of the table of the salesperson, never crossing the table, because essentially the salesperson is building out a solution for them and has to add things together, you know, pick over there, take from there, put it together, and then that's the price.
100%. You don't share that with the client, with the buyer. This is for internal purposes only. And the sales manager, if there's no sales manager, the founder, the CEO needs to take ownership of that price list. And what I find with the price list is that when you start to think about the price list as a piece of information, a piece of communication to the salesperson, you start to understand what needs to go into that in more detail. Because you're listening to the salesperson who's saying, well, but what happens if this, and what's the minimum quantity that I can sell? Oh, that's not in the price list. So let me put that min quantity, you know, 5, max quantity 50, whatever you want to put in that is standard for the salesperson to understand based on your particular situation. It might be also around geographic availability, that we only sell this product in this region, not other regions, because the transport costs to other regions is just too high. So all that information needs to go into the price list, because you want the simplest way for the salesperson to translate that information that they use to sell to the client.
Can I quickly ask, you would never include possible discounts in this price list? I mean, do you really want to open up discounting all the time and your salesperson is the person that's offering that? Or do you do that a little bit later?
So I've seen both approaches. One approach is around, for example, volume. That volume breaks between 1 and 20, the price is X. Between 21 and 50, the price is Y. 50 plus, the price is Z. Over 100, you know, that kind of thing that's in the price list. So you can have price breaks based on volume in the price list. But I've seen both, where you can have a maximum discount in the price list, and you can not have that there and ensure that the sales manager or the founder is involved in making that decision. My personal view on that is not to have it in the price list, is to have that outside. Otherwise, you create an easy path to discounting for the salesperson, and that cheapens your product or your service because you just keep discounting it.
So that's price list, but there's one more.
Right. So the last one I want to talk about, Gareth, is the support for more complex sales. So invariably, as an organization grows, you're going to find, no matter what you're selling, really no matter what you're selling, a far more complex sale that will appear. So if I'm selling cars and somebody comes in and wants to buy a car, I can show them the car, I can show them all the things that, that they can add to the car, and I can sell them the car. But then I might get somebody comes in and says, well, I want to buy a fleet of these cars, but I only want them for 1 year because we've got a embassy that's being set up, and the policy of that government is not to, you know, own the cars for more than 1 year. I'm just making this up.
It's a great example. Okay. Well done.
So now the salesperson is going, well, how do I handle this? It's going to be 20 vehicles. And there's different rules that are being imposed by the buyer. At that point, the salesperson needs to know that they can go to the sales manager or the CEO for support around this. And that is a default setting in the organization. If you, the salesperson, come across something that is far more complex than our standard sales process, the natural way to go about that is to walk into my office, bring me into this sale, and I will support you around this. And 100% of the commission, it still goes to you, even though I'm supporting you. That's an important statement, because you don't want the salesperson to go, oh, let me try this on my own, because if I do it on my own, I'm going to make more commission. You don't want to set that in motion in the organization. You don't want to create that culture. You want to create a culture of reaching out to somebody more senior who's got more experience that can help solve the problem, and the salesperson still get the full benefit of the commission.
It really is. You're putting yourself into a supporting role in order to empower and assist the salesperson, and then, of course, the sales team, to maximize their potential, to maximize the opportunity to close a sale when they're in front of the client. But not only that, we've also spoken about retention and a whole variety of other things. If any of this is sounding new to you who is listening, go back and explore the different episodes that we've done in this series. But Alon, this has brought us to the end. Do you have a final word for us?
Yeah, I think the most important thing for me in this whole series is the concept of thinking about your sales team as individuals who are building their own businesses within your business. When you think about it that way, you want them to win, I wouldn't say at any cost, but at almost any cost. Because
at least 100% of the time.
Yeah, because if they are winning, you win. So it's, if you've got that mindset that they need to be successful within the context of your business, and they need to be making money, and they need to be earning a huge upside for their efforts that's equitable to their efforts and their tenure and their relationships, then you win in the long term.
I like what you're saying, because I've seen in a variety of different environments, and even when I was a little bit younger and starting in one or two, I think we all start in sales at some point, I think. It always felt like it was the other way around. It was, we're trying to restrict you. We're trying to keep you from earning as much as you possibly can. So I love that mind shift, the change in the approach.
Yeah, it's about the equitability of effort to reward, and continuous effort times the tenure, because that tenure means something. A more experienced salesperson can close a deal quicker, with more confidence, and giving the client a sense that they've made the right decision far quicker, and is able also to manage that client into the future with more success and more retention. So you want older, when I say older, more tenured salespeople in your organization. You don't want a 2-month-old salesperson in your organization and then getting another one and getting another one.
And this brings us to the end of this series, which has been incredibly insightful around how to build a sales team in your entrepreneurial business. I'm Gareth Armstrong. This has been a Razor's Edge podcast, and Alon and I will see you in the next series.